This episode is brought to you by Dr. Squatch. When your personal care routine needs a refresh, Dr. Squatch is here to help. They have high-performing natural products with no harmful ingredients that'll have you looking and smelling your best. Like the Bay Rum Soap and Deodorant. It smells delightfully spicy. And right now, they have an amazing offer for new customers. Get 20% off your first purchase of any amount or a subscription order by going to drsquatch.com/Spotify or use the code Spotify at checkout.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hey, everybody.
Do you like getting stoned and watching a movie?
Or just watching a movie?
Well, then check out our podcast,
IMD Weed,
where we
and a guest
go to the movies and discuss it after.
A movie review podcast with a little token twist. Get it?
Oh, boy. But hey, you don't have to smoke weed to enjoy this podcast.
You should enjoy watching movies, though.
Subscribe to IMD Weed on iTunes or your favorite podcasting app.
Hello, friends. Welcome to the Improv Obsession podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Perlstein. Today on the show, we've got Paul Welsh. You know him from UCB LA Herald Team Cooper and my team, Styx Martin. It's going to be the best, so hold tight for that. First, I want to thank the new Improv Obsession hero, Jeremy Trout. Jeremy kicked in a few bucks to keep the show online and available for everybody, and he is an Improv Obsession hero. He also got the gold editions of the Matt Walsh and Ian Roberts episodes that every Improv Obsession hero gets. If you want to kick in a little money, feel free. Just a bit. Come on, don't go crazy. ImprovObsession.com. There's a little link on the sidebar. You can do it with PayPal. There you can also follow the blog where I post episodes, class notes, and generally good improv-related stuff. Also, I am still doing that review drive. If I get 100 reviews, I'll post the Ian Roberts and Matt Walsh episodes online. 100 for Ian Roberts, 200 for Matt Walsh. And thank you to the newest reviewers, Douglas Dogson, Bone Pirate Music, who asked, where's Toonie at? You know what? I got bad news. I think it's going to be a little bit of time. I'm sorry. I don't know. You tell Dave Toonie that he should be on the show. Chris Corbin also reviewed the show. Thank you. And Chris Sass, S-A-S-S. I think that's, I don't know, it's all caps, so I wasn't sure if that stands for something or it's Chris Sass. Anyway, thank you all for reviewing the show. We're a little bit closer to those Matt Walsh and Ian Roberts episodes, but right now we're real close to the Paul Welsh episode because it's happening right now. Listen!
It's the Improv Obsession Podcast. It's the Improv Obsession Podcast. It's the
I think so.
It should be super easy. Don't worry.
I wish I was drunk.
Do you want? We have alcohol. We can make this day turn real weird real quick.
I'm like, yeah.
All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Improv Obsession Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Perlstein. Today, special guest, Paul Welsh. Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for matching my energy. Typical improv.
No problem.
Genius. Yeah. You know Paul Welsh from his UCB LA Herald Team Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was at Munstro, Grandma's Ashes in New York.
Mm-hmm. Both those teams
were Herald teams. There's also fucking Paul Welsh goes to a TED conference and a series of family portraits, I believe.
The show that I did in New York was called Men in Paintings,
something like that.
A night at the Crisp Family Hall of Portraits, or a day. I don't even actually remember the title.
It's important, yeah. there's family portraits and men in paintings. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. And yeah, you've probably seen Paul around any teams. We're on a team called Styx Martin.
Right?
Yeah, I don't know. Anything else? Anything else we should tell people where they might know you from? I don't know.
No, okay. Rather random shit, but, you know.
Other random shit. I saw you in a commercial for some taco joint at one point.
Mm-hmm. I've done only beer and taco commercials.
Sweet, dude. Mm-hmm. So. You're the beer and tacos.
Yeah, I did a Heineken commercial that only ran in Germany.
A Hanukkah?
A Heineken.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I genuinely thought you said, like, Hanukkah commercial. Hey, guys, we're going to really push Hanukkah this year, so we're gonna get the non-Jewish looking guy to like do a commercial.
No, Heineken, which to me is weird because it only ran in Germany, but they hired me.
Do you speak German?
I don't.
Did you? So it was an English ad, and you were just like,
mm-hmm. All right. And there was this dude who came to UCB with like his girlfriend, and he came up to me after a show and was like, "Hey man, you were great." And I thought, like, I was standing with another guy who was on my team, and he was like, "I think you're about to get propositioned to have a threesome."
Yeah,
because it was weird. They were weird, not older, but they were like not your typical UCB crowd.
Sure.
And then he was like, "We're shooting this commercial. Like, will you come to this weird farm? Will you come to this weird farmhouse and shoot it on this day or whatever? It's for this like Heineken tie-in with this barbecue thing." Yeah. And I was like, "Yeah, sure, no problem." And it turned out to be totally legit, but in retrospect, it could have been anything.
That sounds terrifying.
Mm-hmm. So you don't know me from that.
unless you're German listeners. Yeah, there are a few people in Europe. Who knows? Maybe. That makes me laugh. You do you have to deal with people propositioning you for three ways?
No, okay. Absolutely not.
All right. We talked about this at one point, but you are probably one of the most handsome men at UCB.
That's very nice.
Which is, I told you because everybody comes up to me and asks about you very regularly after like shows, like either like close friends or people who I've talked to like twice. They're like, "What's Paul like single? Like, what's going on?" I'm like,
all
right.
That's very nice. Yeah. I actually am completely blind to all of that.
Cool, man.
And have always been.
Well, good news. A lot of women find you attractive.
Well, that's great.
It's great. All right. So, Paul, we'll
that makes me very happy. Actually,
put your dashing good looks aside for a moment.
Great.
We're going to come back to it. We're going to circle around.
Oh, good, because I'm sweating.
That's part of it. Pheromones. So I want to real quick, because I don't know how this happened for you. Let's talk about getting into comedy and improv. What was that all about? Because I know you're a Connecticut guy. You're apparently a smart guy. You apparently started UCB in 2008. But like, how did you get into comedy? Like, where'd that come from?
I had always wanted to do comedy, and basically made a choice after college. I never did comedy like in high school or college. Like, I'm not one of these people who's been doing improv since they were 14.
Right.
But I always really loved comedy, but never thought it was like a job that you could have. So when I went to college, I studied, and I liked school, and I worked really hard. And I figured I'd go to law school. It was always sort of my goal. And then I worked at a law firm for my first year and a half out of college, when I graduated. And it was like a wonderful experience, but also crushingly brutal in terms of the amount of time that you spend. And also, I think, like, at that age, you think you have like a very idealistic view of what practicing law will be like. Yeah. And I think it's largely, but like, my parents aren't lawyers, and so I didn't have any like real firsthand knowledge of, other than some sort of like tangentially related people on my mom's side of the family who ran their own firms. But and I didn't really know what it would be like. I just knew from like pop culture what it was supposed to be like.
Pop culture makes being a lawyer seem pretty cool.
The coolest, but not even just TV. I'm like talking like Clarence Darrow shit, where people are like looking out for other people and like using their brain to manipulate language in a way that helps people and changes the world. And I just really was so attracted to that idea.
Oh, no.
And to like government and law and all this. And then it turns out it was not fun at all. But anyway, at the same time, I had always wanted to do comedy, and I was like, fuck it. Like, I should do it now while I'm doing this thing that I thought I would love, but it turns out is a little bit tough. And I wasn't convinced that it was going to be like a game changer for me, but I had always loved SNL and, did impressions forever of like people that I worked with, and they were always like a big hit in the office. And like in college, like I did like characters when I would get drunk and people would go crazy. But I never thought it was like something that I could do, but I knew that was a thing that they did at UCB. And so I started taking classes at UCB. Actually, I think in 2007.
All right. Well, you need to update your bio on the website.
Well, the bio is when I started performing, because I performed on stage, on the UCB stage, before I got on a Herald team. I was in another show.
Okay.
That got me on the performer page. So that's like my official start, I think.
Wow, fast track, man.
It didn't feel like it, I gotta tell you. but that's how it all started.
I wish you could all seen Paul just like turn and like open up and like almost dramatically reveal that to me. It just goes like, it didn't feel like it. Like it was my 1 year of learning was so hard.
Ooh, it felt fucking like asshole. Maybe a year and a half. I don't even remember actually officially when I started classes, but
oh my
god, 2006. I think it was 2007, but either way, I at that time was working and doing UCB stuff, and I was so happy, and the people that I was working with at UCB were so happy, yeah. And I was just like, this is the fucking best thing ever. Like, these people are fucking so smart, so funny, so weird, and I felt like, I was like, this is it. This, I gotta do this. And at the same time, I was like killing myself applying to law schools and ended up depositing to go during my 201 class with Joe Wingert.
He was my 201 too.
It was the worst class.
You really?
I was excruciating. It's a hard class, oh, but okay. Also because like at that time, like I think in the beginning in 101, you're like, oh, I'm good, I can do this. Yeah. And then in 201, I would literally step out and be like, I have no idea. My responses were all literally always the same. I don't remember what they were, but I remember Wengert being like, you got to stop just saying that one thing after you get initiation. Because they would always get a laugh, but I don't remember what it was. It was probably some sort of non-committal thing. But so, yeah. So then ended up depositing on schools and didn't. I was like, let me give this a year, which I think is like a crazy thing that people always say in the beginning. Because you think like, oh, it'll only take, like, if it doesn't work in a year.
Well,
and I don't even know what that
means.
Well,
it worked a year for you, dick.
No, but I certainly didn't make my living off. You know, I was like, oh, I'll be working in a year or whatever. You know, I don't know what I was thinking. But so I deferred for a year. And then at the end of the year, I was just like still taking classes and loving it, and like looking back on sort of the different choices that were available to me at that time, which were these two different things, and thinking like, okay, I think I want this comedy one instead. I think that's better. I think I'm going to do that.
That's super cool.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
No, I mean, that's cool. I like that because... one, it's like a little bit like, I'm going to do this thing that I like. But two, like the thing that I enjoy about, especially like getting into UCB, and like really like just going to indie shows and stuff. When I figured out that was a thing, I was like, oh, cool. Everybody here that I'm hanging out with is like so happy and enjoys doing this. And like the people who are further along really enjoy doing it. And like, oh, that's cool. Like it's fun here. I can hang out and have fun and doing this thing that I like anyway. Like,
wait, going from there, like it, just being immersed in those two environments, because I was really immersed in the other environment all the time. We worked like 100-hour weeks and lived in a hotel across the street from the office and like crazy shit. And the upside is they're supposed to help you get into school, which they totally do. But then and these people were so unhappy. There was one guy who was like, you got to do something else. Like, if you fucking, he's like, I have a fucking kid and a wife who has a taste for Tiffany's and a fucking, like my parent, like I had no choice. He was like a professional soccer player. So he came to it late and he was like, if you could do anything else, do it.
Wow.
He was like, if I could still fucking play soccer, I would play soccer. But like, you know, he's a dude in his 30s. He's like, your body just fucking breaks down. It's not an option to me anymore. So I needed to do something else. And he was like, if you can find something else that you can sustain, just do it.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right.
That's good advice.
That's like from a guy who's like, from the outside perspective, you're like, oh, that person is fucking successful and like should be like happy with his life.
Yeah.
And he wasn't, and there was lots of people like that. And then at UCB, I took classes with Chris Gethard at the time, and he was just like so fucking bananas for improv. Just loved it so much, and I was like, this is crazy. This guy's been doing this for so long.
Yeah,
or I don't even know how long he'd been doing it at that time, but I was like, if this is the sort of like infectious nature of this art form, then I need to be involved.
Yeah, that's cool. I love it. When I was I do film stuff a lot, like production, post production, whatever. And when I was right out of college, I was doing a lot of freelance work, and me and my buddy, we were talking to this old grip guy who, like, you know, he was like in charge of setting up all the lights and whatever, you know, scripts. And it was, but like he had a good job, and like we kind of like my friend Vernon and I basically talked to him about, like, how do you get it? How do we do it? Like, whatever.
Yeah.
And that guy gave the exact, like, you don't get it. You don't want to do this. Like, it sucks. It's so hard. And, like, it's, you know, your body just, you ache. And, like, you're constantly looking for this thing. And, like, there's sons of bitches. And you're answering to, like, a billion people. He just hated it.
Yeah.
And I was like, cool. Like, I shouldn't do a production. Because, yeah, like, at the end of the day, like, those, you're in pain because you've been standing up all day. I think he's right. I'm going to not do that. And then my friend Vernon, like, defiantly was like, you can't tell me what to do. I'm going to be this guy who's, like, admitting how much he hates what he does. He's like, I'm going to go for it.
But at the same time, yeah, but at the same time, like, you'd probably be able to find another guy who's like, being a grip is the best. Like, I get to hang out every day with these dudes and, like, run lights or whatever. Like, it's the same thing for what I was doing. There would probably be plenty of people who'd be like, this is the best. Like, I love this career and this life. And that's awesome. But it just turned out that it wasn't exactly my point of view. It wasn't serving my point of view on what I wanted my life to be like.
Yeah. Okay, so you go into classes at UCB. I have trouble believing that you weren't instantly funny. what were you like in those early classes? Like, what were you like struggling with? Do you remember anything that you were like, oh, this is the thing that I gotta be?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Always. I am personally, and I'm not anymore, comedically, like, painfully shy. And so in those early days, I think it's weird because you enter those classes with this sense of hubris of, like, I can do this. Like, I'm fucking funny. You wouldn't pay $350 to have someone tell you what to do unless you thought you were fucking funny.
Yeah.
Or that there was a capability that you could be. I think there's probably very people who start with true humility, which I think is what gets introduced, like, as you go through the program.
Yeah.
You are like, oh, I don't know shit. Like, even now, like, I don't know anything.
Like, 201. Yeah. Thing said. That, as soon as you used to really start applying that game stuff, like, oh, fuck. Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I don't know anything.
My funny office antics are not working anymore.
Not at all. Or, like, voices or whatever. Yeah. I was like, oh, like, character heavy, I think. But, yeah, I always my hardest thing was, I think, like, just getting off the back line from the very beginning. And I don't know, in the early classes, what else I really struggled with. I think definitely understanding game at the beginning.
Yeah.
Interesting. Those are the notes that I got. And being able to, share. Like, Anthony King was like, you are really good, and I don't think sometimes you're aware of how important you are to a scene. In, like, a non-selfish way, but, like, you can't always be the interesting thing on stage. And, like, finding a way to make other people shine. And it's going to be a challenge for you because of whatever weird thing is going on with you. And I was like, fair enough.
He said, you're too good. Stop being so good all the time.
No, but
let
just, like,
let other people be good. This is a typical... This is exactly what I expect. These are the struggles of Paul Wells. This is exactly what...
No!
I got to perform at UCB in less than a year. And, God, it was so
That's
hard.
That's not true.
Oh, you
That's
fucker.
Not true. Well, that other thing, we really created that other opportunity for ourselves. They weren't clamoring for me, I can assure you. And I was very much in that show, like, the low man on the totem pole. Everyone else in that show was, like, on a Herald team and was, like, really...
What was that show?
It was an improvised soap opera called As a Diamond Burns that the Anna Rubinova put together. And she...
From Left-Handed Radio.
That's right. And she knew all these people, and I had just been in classes with her, but she, like, pulled in all these, like, awesome performers. So I was very much, like, outclassed. But that's how I got... That was, like, my first show at UCB.
Interesting.
But yeah, I think those were the main notes. The shyness thing, I think, was the huge thing in the beginning.
That's interesting. I could see you potentially having shy tendencies in your performance, but it's not a thing that, like, cripples you.
It doesn't. You know? I enjoy patience. I don't necessarily know that I've always effectively dispatched it, but I do enjoy, like, a patient slow scene. Like, I'll wait for a long time to give an initiation. I like to watch. My thing is, I love the people I play with, all of them.
Yeah.
And so I feel like one of my weaknesses is I watch and enjoy a lot.
Yeah.
When I should be, like, on the front of my feet, like, ready to get out there, which I make a conscious effort to do.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, though we did that show last Thursday. Nobody needs to know, have seen this, but yeah, we had a crazy scene going on. for a while about Johnny because we didn't know how poop works, I guess.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then, yeah, like, there's so much going on. And it was very funny. But I just, like, turned to you and I was like, he hasn't really said anything. And I just kind of, like, I was like, I'm going to just put the attention on Paul and see what happens. And then you came out with this killer line that got a huge laugh from our, like, four-person audience.
They were super supportive, though.
That was a supportive four-person audience. Everybody else laughed. Fuck those guys. But those four people were cool. But, yeah, I mean, I think that's really, like, almost signature in a way, is like you'll be hanging out just like waiting and like, okay, I'm gonna let this happen, and then the focus will come to you and you'll just like smash a line. You're like, oh great, we should have been paying attention to Paul the whole time.
No, that would be terrible. And that would lead to lots of too complicated of a scene. But I think like a lot of times, like even in that scene, I remember like just trying to be the people that you're supposed to be in that scene instead of like acting and like telegraphing it or whatever, like just like quietly existing as a student in that class and like reacting quietly and like a student would, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think to me that's like, there's so much value in that. And there's audiences appreciate that. I think just like your like dedication to like, who are you supposed to be?
Yeah.
And not being like, I'm a wacky. Not that that's what everyone else does.
No, but everybody else does the wacky thing for sure.
I think there's like, I love silence on stage.
Yeah. I'm trying to think too. What was the... No, I can't remember. We did that one, the cage match, the theater, the like theater scene, like we're going to practice kissing or whatever. Do you remember that? Like, it was like, we're going to do Romeo and Juliet, we're going to practice kissing. Yeah. And everybody, even that, like, I think, if I remember correctly, everybody else, like, deliver, like, I'm this guy, like, was, like, very quick to do it. And then, like, you really, like, let it, like, naturally come to you, I feel like. And then you delivered your this guy. And it was very funny, too. But, like, I think, and that's one of those things that, like, I'm not going to articulate this well, but I do think that there's this thing in improv that is 100% like it's very important that two people come together for a joke to work. Mm-hmm. So like, if announcing you're this funny character is not as funny as somebody say, all right, like, what are you doing here? This funny character is like, that is 100 times funnier than like announcing the funny character alone, like interjecting.
Because it's selfish, like I think, and then that's the thing that like, talking about things that I struggled with early on, I was like, oh, I have a good idea, this is how I'm gonna do it.
Yeah.
And it's like, no one wants to fucking see that. Like, no one wants to fucking see you shoehorn your like garbage fucking idea that you came up with in your car, like, well, in New York on the subway or whatever, into a scene. It always reads false. And I had really good early teachers who would call it out to be like, I feel like you had that idea in the back line and you didn't get that idea from that initiation, so do another scene. And that's fucked. Like, that's fucked. Like, don't do that.
Wow, that's hardcore.
That's Chris Gether. He was like very big on like Chris Gether. Be like honest with your reactions. And that was enormously helpful to
me. I thought I heard an interview with Gether or read one at some point where he's like, he just hates people who do like big characters and shit like that, and he just tries to destroy them in class. Like, he literally said, like, I just destroy people. I'm like, holy fuck.
He's definitely tough. Yeah. But he's fair and you know, he knows everything. I mean, he's so good. but he like all about, I was very, very lucky to have teachers. My first teacher was Zach Woods, and then I had Wingert, and then I had Gethert, and then I had Anthony, Shannon, and Billy. And they're all just, like, the fucking best. And they love what they do and are different. Like, you take different things from each of them.
Yeah.
And I was just so lucky to have all of them, like, in a row. I never had a dud. I don't know if anyone ever has or if anyone would ever say they did. But, like, every teacher I had was a fucking slam dunk and I wanted to take them again. I think I almost took all of those people twice.
Yeah.
Except for Zach and Joe, because they mostly taught the, like, lower levels whenever I was taking.
Huh. That's interesting. I love it. Okay, so you're doing this improvised soap opera.
Mm-hmm.
Although I really do think, and I very quickly attempted to research you. I was running late today, but it sounded like you were involved in the creation of that. Is that insane?
Yeah, we did. Like, it was Anna's idea, and she put together the cast, and it was like, so a lot. There are people who are in it who are out here. Mm-hmm. Andre Vermeulen was in it, and Mike Still. I'm sure I'm going to forget people, but I think they might be the only other ones that are out here. But it was an amazing, big cast, and we basically workshopped it with this guy and learned the sort of genre of soap operas, and then we did, like, we improvised it as characters, so we created this whole town.
Yeah.
And then we were essentially like one main character through the entire thing, and then we would have like swing characters that we would do or whatever the scene needed you could come in as. But a lot of times it was like adopting a posture or adopting a vocal choice, and we would know, okay, this person is like Tango McKnight or whatever, and so now we're playing in that world in his house or whatever.
Right.
So yeah, we worked on it for like 6 months and then spanked it, and then it ran for like maybe too long. It ran for a long time.
That's really cool. Okay, so you're doing that. Obviously, that's helping you get better. I mean, did you learn anything that you pulled from doing that? Like, you're like, oh, this is like an important thing. Any
just being confident, okay, like playing with people that are better than you is the fucking best thing that you can ever do, I think.
That's
like,
why I'm on Six Martin, bro.
Oh, yeah, no, you're
all home runs all day.
I mean, I feel that way too, you know, like I think you play with people who are better than you,
yeah,
and it's like tennis, like you just get better, it makes you better. And I think on that team, especially just being in their company, I was like, holy shit, like these are people who I would fucking kill to be on teams with, even when I was on a team with them, you know what I mean? Like just not realizing,
I wish I could
do it. Yeah, like not realizing. Yeah. Like, you're in it, dude. Like, you're doing it. Just enjoy it. And I think that's probably what I took up. Just confidence.
Nice. I love it. All right. So then let's talk about the path to doing a Herald team then. So, like, what was that? Like, it sounds like you got on in, like, 3 days.
No, it took me... I think it took 2 or 3 years. And I think 3... Yeah.
He really means 3 months.
No, it took a while because I felt, and it's going back to that Anthony note of, he was like, you need to like figure out how to control yourself on stage, like be able to control a scene that exists outside of just you.
Yeah.
Which I think is a challenge, and you know, you have to learn what you do before you can figure out how to not do it or to control it.
Yeah.
And so, so I got on in 2010. And
well, how do you do that? How do you figure out what you do?
I honestly took 16 classes. I do classes all the fucking time.
Yeah.
I always felt like I was doing good work and people liked me, but I was like, I'm not good. I'm not good enough. I have to take another class. I have to study with someone else. Have to get another perspective on this. And luckily during the writer strike, there were a bunch of awesome people who did like 4-week workshops because they weren't working. People who wrote for like Colbert, and so mostly Chicago people, I think. And that was super helpful to get like another point of view on improv. And so it took 3 years. I just constantly worked, I guess.
Yeah.
And I loved it.
Yeah.
You know? So I think it's just being more comfortable and knowing when to like hang back.
Yeah.
So yeah, in 2010, and because I think I auditioned, I got it because in New York they do auditions more frequently than here, and so I think it was like my 5th audition.
Yeah.
Which by that point, most of my friends were on teams, or most of the people that I was on like indie groups and stuff with, like the really good ones who were really serious about it, had already been picked off onto teams, and it was like every time I was like, oh man, like it's just never gonna happen. It's just not gonna happen for me. And I was like, maybe that's okay. Like maybe I just like am a person that people dig, and I'm not on a team, and I do my own thing. And then it happened, and I got on a team with all of these people who were like the same. Like we'd been around, our friends were on teams, and it was like 8 people who was like, yeah, of course, like great. These people are on teams. Like they're fucking great.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
And which one was that?
Monstro. That was my first team.
I love it. And then, okay, so let's a little bit about like your run as Monstro. What was that? I mean, was it?
It was really hard. It was the fucking best. Like I will tell you one thing. Like
please
being,
tell me one thing.
I'll tell you just one thing,
and then we'll stop.
Just turn this fucker off. It was the best. Like it honestly, like I would go to Harold Knight and watch my friends, and I guess we do it here with outro songs, but I would watch my friends like bow after their heralds and hear them like play their outro songs and just be like, that's the coolest fucking thing in the whole world.
Yeah.
Like those guys are like, I was so proud of them. I was so happy. So getting to do it, even though it was a hard experience, I was always like, holy shit, like I can't believe we're doing this. Like we get to fucking, I mean sometimes we didn't want to bow, but you know, like we get to fucking do this. And then I don't know. When you finish a show, that, like a Harold show, it's just... Especially in those early days, it was like, this is fucking magical. Like, this is what we've been waiting for. And then the reality sets in of like, this is hard work. It's a whole other game now.
Right.
It's a different beast than just doing regular shows and just doing regular improv. So it becomes hard. And we really struggled to do good shows. We tried really, really hard. And we got along like gangbusters. We were fucking in love with each other. We made each other mixtapes. We went on vacation together. I mean, we went bananas. And we got drunk together all the time. But we would rehearse twice a week. We would see a show together once a week. And then we would hang out once a week, most weeks. And that was like all of us. Then the rest of us, you know, in our composite parts would spend time together as well. And for some reason, we just couldn't make it work on stage. It just never quite stacked up. We weren't terrible, but it always felt like it was tough. And we performed a lot at the very end of Harold Night in New York. I don't think it runs like this now, but there's like 1 to 5 slots. Mm-hmm. And the sort of like worst teams go in the first or the last slot.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Or the teams that are like having a harder time. Yeah, so yeah. The best team at the time would go fourth. And then not everyone would leave, but the theater would certainly have like a picked over feeling by the time you came up on the fifth slot. And we performed a lot in that slot.
Yeah. I went to New York in whatever year. Was it 2011? It must have been 2011, right when there were new Harold teams. And I was like, wait, they do just 5 shows in like one night? I was like, that's weird.
I think they ended up breaking it up.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. But yeah, I remember it getting very, very filled at one point. Like, people were standing everywhere, and then, like, it kind of dropped off. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, because the anchor team at the time was the fourth team.
Yeah.
I also came in the year before, there were 10 teams, I think, like, in an effort to get tons of people onto Harold Night, and it ended up with this huge bloodletting the year that I got on.
Yeah.
So a lot of my friends, who I was talking about earlier, who had gotten on teams, by no fault of their own, found themselves... sort of without teams when I got on.
That's rough.
Yeah.
So never really clicked on stage. I mean, I shouldn't say that.
We had great shows and we had so much fun.
But I know what you mean.
We struggled it's very thing. Obviously.
Yeah. You know, and I don't think you're throwing anybody under the bus or a team under the bus by doing this, but do you have a thing that like, oh, we just couldn't really do second beats or like, we just were all excited. Like where you guys stick smart and you just all wanted to talk at the same time. Was
no,
that your problem?
I love having that problem.
It's the best.
I think that level of excitement is the best, but, because it's that like sense of discovery. Like we can all do this together and get so excited. Yeah. I love it. I think our problem insofar as one could be easily identified was that it's just fucking hard to do a good Harold, and we had all waited so long and it was so fucking important to us that I think we were scared, and we didn't listen as well as we could to one another, because I think we were like, no, I can make this work, you can make and we were, I think everyone on the team was like, no, we can do this, we can get this back, like we can put the show back on the tracks, like we can move out of the fifth slot, we can do all this great stuff because we love each other and we're good and everyone on this team is fucking talented and smart.
Yeah.
And we won, and it was so fucking, I think we treated it with such like precious kid gloves that we ended up destroying it.
Yeah.
Not fully destroying it. I feel like I'm being unfair.
No, I know.
That we ended up not being as good as we could have been because we were too scared to have that thing taken away.
Yeah.
Because we were all, you know, sort of like, I feel like perennially also rans in the sort of like Harold Derby.
Also ran?
Like also rans.
Like, oh, gotcha. Got like,
yeah, but, you know, maybe next time
that.
Kind of thing.
Okay. I was like, what the fuck is this term? Got it. fucking East Coast guy. That's what I'm going to blame it on. Interesting. Very interesting. I love it. Because there is a huge thing that improv, I think, to me is all about fear and, like, a lot of that, just fighting that off. Like, I was talking to Dave just the other day, and I was like, Dave Christensen, been on the podcast, a member of Six Martin, great guy.
At The Hobbit on Twitter. Actually, I don't know if that's true.
I think that sounds about right.
There's numbers, I think.
There's numbers, but just whatever.
No, I'm plugging Dave's Twitter.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you for doing that. He appreciates getting any followers because you couldn't say the name right.
You're welcome, at The Hobbit.
But a bunch of people are going to follow the Peter Jackson film. But like I was saying to Dave, like I think Six Martins is like, you know, if we're talking about like our own team and our star and experience, like we're a good team. And then you, Dave, and Johnny Sportsman all got on Herald teams. And I remember like noticing specifically in you three, like a confidence jump happened in all of you. Mm-hmm. And just like almost like a level jump. Like if there's like all these levels that everybody's at in their improv, everybody just like decided to jump up one level kind of because of that like validation, you know, whatever. And then I think we had the same thing when we won Cage Match a couple weeks ago. Like we did a show after that. And I was like, holy shit, when did we get this good? Like, and you know, we had that like attitude about us, like, oh, we're good. Now we've been approved as being good. We don't have to be afraid or like prove it anymore. Like, we're just going to be good because we are. Yeah. And I think that's like a huge thing. But like, I guess the opposite of that is like, oh, we really want this thing. We finally got this thing. When you really need to make it work, you can kind of kill it a little just by like, I love it. Please don't.
Yeah, you smother it. I think that happens with New Herald teams. I do. I think that like Rand, like we got formed at the same time as two other teams, and the team that looked like the Frankenstein team where people were like, oh, I don't know about those guys, ended up being like legendarily good.
Yeah.
And the teams that had the good, the quote unquote people who were like, oh, I'm so excited about this team. It like, they look stacked.
Yeah.
We were both like, okay, but never quite rose to the level of the other guys.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. Cause I feel like I have a, you know, well, a bias against seeing teams that are like, the Frankenstein. Cause I'm like, oh, the key could have some problems there. Yeah. Could be some problems. And like, what do I fucking know? I've been doing improv for less than 3 years. I'm full of shit.
No one knows anything.
I think there's like that bias against it. Cause you can potentially, instead of, you can bring in the egos or bring in the I don't care enough to like suck. So it's interesting. Guys, it's possible to suck on Herald Night.
That's well, it's very possible.
That's the thesis of this conversation,
if
I guess.
It's your first team. Yeah. And if you're lucky enough to get another like bite at the apple, then awesome. But you know, sometimes then you get to move on to other things and then it feels like a whole different ball game.
Yeah.
Like moving on to a second team felt like I was like, oh, this is a different situation altogether.
Yeah. So, Grandma's Ashes, what happened? So Monstro was broken up.
So we got broken up.
How long did you guys go? Like 3 days? What was that?
It was like, I think it was 8 months or 10 months. It wasn't a full year.
Yeah.
And we got broken up. We got split up because again, we were so close and we got split up 4-3-1. So 4 of the people went to one team, 3 of the people went to another team, and I went to another team entirely.
Oh, no.
By myself, which I felt like I had like survivor's guilt or something, because I got moved to this team that was like great and they were all people that I was terrified to play with because they were again like veterans who like half of them had just been on Bastion, which was the longest running Herald team in New York, and they were like amazing and all this other stuff, and it was like this good veteran team.
Yeah.
And so I did feel really bad because I wanted to be on a good team, but I also wanted to go down with the shit. Like, sure. I wanted to be with my friends.
Did you want to sing that chorus? I will go down with this shit.
That's not even what I was thinking of. I had pirates in my head. All right, that's fine. No. But yeah, so I moved on to that team, and it was like, it was weird, but it was the best. Like,
yeah.
Because it was so much lower, like nothing mattered except for doing shows. Like in the first day, we picked our name, we picked our opening, we took our picture, we found a coach, and we did one and we picked our opening song. It took Monstro, I couldn't even put a number on it, but it took us forever to do
an 8-month run.
And we got into a really big fight over our intro song. Like, one person wanted this song, but it was like the intro song of a this is not going to be interesting to anyone.
It's very interesting. You're not understanding like this crowd.
The intro song to another team at another theater who had been around for a long time.
Yeah.
And we were all like, this song is kick ass. Like, this is a song that like we entered to. This is like swagger and fucking good.
Yeah.
And there's one guy on our team who's like, no, it's disrespectful to this other team. And we were like, fuck you, dude. Like, that's what? They're not even at the same theater. Like, it doesn't matter. It makes no difference. And we were just so fucking passionate about everything. And this, when I got on Grandma's Ashes, it was like, great, we were done. Literally in 3 hours. We did a 2-hour practice. We went down the street to like a furrier. We were like, can we wear a bunch of fur coats in your store and take a picture? And they were like, sure. That was our picture. And we were done.
Sure.
Completely done. And it was great. Oh, it was amazing. But I was like, when are we going to hang out? And they were all kind of like, let's do rehearsal on Tuesday before we do Herald Night, so we can make this like kind of like a 1-day commitment. And I was like, wait, what? Like, when is dinner? And like, where are the mixtapes? But it was a different vibe, totally.
When is dinner? Oh, no.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, that's my favorite thing.
But they were all, they'd all been, like, yeah. There was one person on the team who had been on Harlem Nights 7 years, 8 years. Yeah. Like, they'd been on for a long enough time that they were just like, oh, teams come and go. But, like, let's do good work. It's not that they didn't care.
Yeah.
But it was very much about, like, doing good shows and, like, not being intimidated.
Sure. I think I'm personally struggling with a similar thing on our indie team. And like just like, oh, what? Like, why aren't we having dinner? I feel like I want that, too. And that's it's a different, you know. It's
yeah, like, the only thing I ever want to do. I always want to hang out.
Just want to hang out. Yeah.
Because well, it helps. It helps, like, enormously.
I think Dickie and I are going to get addicted to alcohol and always drink here after work. So please I'm join us. Because, again, we did a lot of that in preparation. Okay. So let's see. What else? So Grandma's Ashes. And then how long did that stick around?
They became a weekend team maybe 2 months after I moved.
Right, yeah. That was right after you left. They became a weekend team. Okay.
We became really good. We had an amazing... I'm, like, giving all this credit to all these... But, like, we had a really super amazing coach who... We had a couple of personnel changes, and then we just gelled into this nice fucking unit. And we had Jordan Klepper, who was a guy who came from Chicago. And I think it was that element of, like, being exposed to a different type of... He just had exercises that we hadn't done. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like at some point you're like, oh, I've done this. I've done... Like, there's not that same... And it allowed us, again, to enter into that world of, like, oh, we're discovering this for the first time all over again. Like, there are things that we can do. Like, he would make us, like... This is going to sound so creepy, but he would make us, like, touch each other's faces. or, like, use, like, your body or, like, use just your voice in a way to, like, start a scene.
Yeah.
And it was... And he made us literally do trust falls, which I was like, this has got to be a fucking joke. Like, I am a... we are grown people. Like, and we were literally in some fucking studio on 14th Street, like, picking each other up and carrying each other around the room. That's and the I don't know if it helped or it hurt, but it sure did... put us into a different place. And all of a sudden we got great. And then I left and another member left. And then they subbed in two new people. And when they did the next round of Harold auditions, they got moved to the weekend. As well they should be, because a lot of those guys were like long overdue to graduate from Harold.
For sure.
Amazing.
Interesting. Okay, so what... why'd you come down to L.A.? I mean, what the hell?
I really was very happy in New York with what I was doing at the theater, but wanted to do more. Like, essentially just, like, wanted to work. And I was auditioning for commercials and was, like, I had this amazing year
year. You did the Heineken barn thing.
That's
you
right.
You reached the top.
I narrowly avoided that threesome, and then I felt like I was done. I had this, like, amazing year at the theater where I felt like finally things were going really well for me. And I had, like, what I wanted. I was on a good team, and I was so happy. And it felt always, like, kind of like I cheated. Like, I didn't.
Yeah,
and maybe that's
like
my problem.
I feel like you cheated, too.
But I always... Maybe it's a thing that I just... It's... I don't know what it is, but I was always like, oh, like, eventually they'll find out that, like, there's seven good people on this team, and I'm just, like, a weirdo who's, like, masquerading as one of them. but I was on that team, and I had written, sort of, like, in the run-up to the time that I got on Harold, because I was so frustrated about not getting on, had started to write a one-person show and then did that at the same time that I was on that last team. And so I had this year where I was like, oh, this is, like, what I wanted to do here. Mm-hmm. And felt like I don't want to get too comfortable. And I want to challenge myself, and I also want to work.
Yeah.
And it didn't seem like there were a lot of jobs for me, and it seemed like, I just wanted a new challenge, which was very scary.
Yeah, brave. I mean, that sucks. Like, I don't know. The idea of, like, moving and, like, that stresses me out times a million.
Oh, so horrifying. I mean, not horrifying.
You can say horrifying. Dramatic. Why not be real dramatic?
It was not horrifying, but it was like a fucking huge gut check to be like, this, no one cares about. There's no reason anyone should know who you are outside of UCB.
Yeah.
And certainly not here, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's a completely distinct community, and you can have no expectation that it will carry over.
Yeah.
You can only take the skills that you've acquired and, like, how good you've gotten from that other place. That's the only thing that you take with you. The rest of it...
Yeah.
It's no big deal.
Yeah.
It expires.
Yeah. Interesting. So, Well, you're on a Herald team now, UCBLA.
That's such a downer.
No. It's whatever. No, we've talked about much worse.
I got much worse if we want to go down.
Oh, no. talk about your mom working with the inner city youths.
She wishes.
But you did get on a team out here. And, like, I feel like, you know, I don't know. God, when did you join Styx Martin? It feels like it was pretty quick to when you moved out here.
Pretty quick after I moved.
But I felt like very quickly it was like, oh, Paul Wells. Like, you can't check out Paul Wells.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I really tried when I first moved here because, honestly, you don't really have... I didn't have any other choice. Like,
yeah.
I really tried to do as many shows as I could and go to indie stuff and hang out.
Yeah.
Which was great. It was the best because everyone is really nice.
Yeah.
But it's, again, I suffered from the same thing of, like, the first couple of shows that I did, I was really, really nervous. And a lot of the stuff that I feel like I could go like weird or dark really quick in scenes.
Yeah.
And I think like without a primer on like whether or not that's okay. Or like if this person is not like a true
sure.
danger to us, like it doesn't endear in quite the same way. So I was like really shy when I came, but I made it a point to do as many shows as I could. At least like I remember writing when I first got here, like 2 shows a week, every week. And if you didn't do that, then you failed.
Yeah.
That's not failed, but like that you really, that's like something you should be doing. You should be in class once a week and you should be performing at least twice a week.
Yeah.
But because I didn't really know, not that I didn't know anyone, but I didn't have a good lay of the land. So I was like, you know, two a week sounds reasonable if I could scrap that together.
Yeah. It worked out all right. Yeah, I feel like, and then when, I remember you joining Styx and like feeling like doing scenes with you and stuff and going like, oh, okay. This guy's going to keep it on track, and he's going to do, like, good moves so I can suck a little. Like, I remember going, like, okay, make a choice that you was, like, harder for you.
Yeah.
So, like, personally for me. And then, like, let's try to work that out, but don't worry, because if I'm doing a scene with Paul, he'll kind of help me make that choice. Like, I remember that we did this scene about, I think, like, we were British brothers who like to have sex a lot.
Oh yeah.
Very long ago. Mm-hmm. Like that was like, and I was like, this Leland's is such apartment. A weird, yeah, it's a Leland's apartment. And I remember like this, like one, that's such a weird like premise and like easy to go like shitty with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, I'm like, I don't like doing like accents because what happens inevitably, I just forget to do it. Like
but
I just,
you did it.
I did. Yeah. But I'm like, I'm just going to do this. And then like, I just said my like stupid like, and I was like, oh god, I can't believe that. And you like, you did your little British voice and like in return, and then you smacked whatever like my opening line was back to me, and like really like made me get into it. And I'm like, okay, cool, we're doing it, but this is exactly what I expected. And like, I was like, oh, I feel like any other people maybe would let me like lose the accent or like just be easy and do like shitty perv jokes in it. And you were like, nah.
Like, why wouldn't you want to have that fun? You know, to me, that's like,
no.
A lot of times when you do a scene like that, it's like so fucking absurd. And you're like, when else will I get to do this? This is the fucking coolest thing. Like, when else will I get to be a British dude who, I think, if I'm remembering the scene correctly, one of us had a really big or small dick. I don't remember.
Yeah, I think I ended up with a really small dick.
Yeah. And we were just, like two English dandies talking in our nice apartment. And it's like, you'll never actually get to do that. So why wouldn't you fucking just like rip into it?
It was fun. It was so much fun. But I mean, that was one of those things too. Like, I think, you know, like you're saying, like perform with people who you feel like are better than you. It's like, cool, I'm going to like allow myself to be uncomfortable because I'm not so worried about like the scene going like in other teams where, you know, I felt like maybe I'm the best person on the team or one of the better, you're like, okay, like how can I keep this on track and like make sure to like be watching out for everybody, be like, oh no, I got somebody watching out for me, I can just relax.
Dude, that's amazing, because I literally have I don't think I've ever been on a team where I'm like, I'm the best.
Really?
I don't think so.
Oh no.
I think I've always played with people who I'm like, oh, how do you do that?
That's funny. That's
it's
really
crazy.
Interesting. I have trouble believing that, but okay, good. Paul, maybe you need a confidence check. Like,
maybe.
You don't think you're the best on teams. You don't know how ridiculously handsome you are. I told you we're going to loop back to that.
No.
Like, what is your problem,
but
man?
But it's not like necessarily not thinking I'm the best, but I'm like, oh, there's stuff that like I could never do. Like, even now playing on the team that I play on, I'm like, oh, these people do stuff that like I can't do.
Yeah.
And they, you know, everyone brings something, their own little thing to the table, but I'm like, oh man, that's cool. I don't know. It makes me feel like I sound like such a dumb little kid. I'm like, cool.
But that's the best. I love it.
I love it.
Come on. Okay, cool. If you're not, if you don't, I think if you don't have that mentality a little bit in doing this improv thing, then like you suck. I'm just going to say that. I think you should have a joy and admiration for like people you're with and like people you do. Because yeah, if you're not finding that on your team, you probably shouldn't remain on that team forever. Because yeah, that sucks to be on the, because I've been there on that team where you're like, what? Come on, guys. Like, why can't we do this? Like, why can't we improvise? Like, you know.
It's so fucking, it's so hard. So to not like it is just like, I'm making a dumb point, but like to not like it is just like, why the fuck would you do this?
Yeah.
If you're like, oh, I'm going to go to a 2-hour rehearsal, pay someone $60 so I can fucking make shit up.
Yeah.
And not like it? Does that seem like the work of a sane person? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, even at its best, it seems like the work of an insane person. So
yeah.
I think it's so irrational to be like, I don't like it.
Yeah.
And everyone gets in ruts, but.
Yeah. Oh, I'm in a rut. 98% of the time. I think that's what it was.
I find it hard to believe.
It feels like it, because like I feel like if you're, it's sort of like, I almost feel like I'm in this weird, or it's easy to get like almost in this weird 201 arrested development where you're like, cool, like I realize that there's more. Like, it's like when you get into 201, you realize that there is more than like, oh, I just came out and made up something and I did it and it's right. But when you realize that like, oh, there's a whole world of possibilities, and you see inspiring people do inspiring things, and you're like, even when you're like, oh, I think I'm good, or like in my core, like I can run a game, or I can straight man, or I can be really kooky, whatever it is. And once you, when you realize that, you're like, oh, this is cool. But then you go like, but what improv is infinity, and I need to achieve the infinity of it. And it like, it sucks because you're just like, I want to do that. Like, why can't I?
That's all I ever wanted.
I saw Jacob Womack, who I'm sure you know, like do a, or,
so funny.
It was him and Nick came out as a tooth. Mm-hmm. Like, he played a tooth in a scene, and Jacob Womack played the guy. And I was like, this is the best scene I've ever seen, because I can't like, and it, you know, maybe it probably wasn't, but it was a really good scene. But I was like, I can't believe that I'm seeing somebody play a tooth and a guy talking to his tooth, and it's really funny and like kind of believable, and they're handling it well. I was like, this is, I've never initiated as a tooth. And like that, I remember one of my last shows, I'm like, I'm going to play an inanimate object. I'm going to try to do that once. And I didn't do it. I was playing like all these fucking, you know, smart ass dudes.
It's the coolest. Like, it's so like, but going back to that, like, all I ever wanted was to be good, to be a good improviser and not just funny.
Yeah.
Because I think, like, we were talking about at the beginning, it's like, you can be funny, definitely.
Yeah.
And not be a good improviser. And I feel like that's always, for me, like a chip that I always have on my shoulder a little bit of why I want to be a better improviser. Because I think, like, I don't know that I've ever. There are people who learn improv and become funny.
Yeah.
And there are people who are, I think, like, start off funny but have to learn how to do improv, if that makes sense. Like,
totally,
it's a weird inverse.
Totally.
And so I feel like right out of the gate, I felt like people would laugh at me. I don't know that I was funny. I don't know that I'm going to take credit for that. But I always felt like when auditions would come up and I wouldn't get on a team or whatever, I'd be like, because I'm not good enough.
Yeah.
And so that's all, like, to be, like, a technically good improviser, like a proficient improviser, is so important.
Being a good improviser is significantly harder than being funny, because because my whole life up until improv, I was very funny.
Yeah.
And in improv, I can be very funny and do poor improv. I can get huge laughs, and you know, I can do solid things that will get a strong reaction, an audience reaction. And it is bad improv. And also, like, I think I was talking to Dickie once. We did a, I do not think you were there for that show, or maybe you were, I don't know. Whatever, we did like a pattern game, and it was going weird, and like, we went off the rails on it. We've all forgot what the thing was. We were going for way too long. I'm like, cool, I'm going to sell out our pattern game. I'm going to do it in a funny way.
Yeah.
And we're going to just end it, because if somebody has to, like, and I was like, I have to kill this. And like, and in my head, I'm like, I know that I've been killing what we're doing, but I have to do it because it's fun. It has to be done because we can't keep doing this, and I have to do it in a funny way. And so, like, we did it. So in that moment, like, we did bad improv, and like, who cares, pattern games go wonky sometimes. But I'm like, so the it's not hard to get out of it with like a stupid joke and just like whatever, but it would have been, it's hard, clearly it's harder to like find a way to get it back on track. Like, if I was better there probably is a way that I could find get that pattern game right back on track. But I'm like, no, 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 I'm just going to sell this out and, like, we can move on.
But it is great. I think that, that again, is just, like, confidence and patience of being like, yeah, yeah, we can get this back. Like, we're on this. Like,
yeah.
You can see a team... And I can feel it in myself when it's like, oh, this show is not going well. Like, we got to get this back on the tracks. And once you think that, it doesn't work. You can't do it. It has to be the best show. You know what I mean? Like, what's happening in that moment has to be good.
Yeah.
Which is hard, like, hard place to get to. I struggle with it all the time.
Yeah.
I'm being like, oh, well, this is not going well, so why should we even try?
I remember doing a Herald in my maybe first year of improv, and it was going bad, and I didn't do the first two beats. And I did the third beat. I'm like, cool, I'll do the third beat, and I'll try to do a good one. And then I'll initiate the first beat of this, the first scene, or the second beat of the first scene, mm-hmm. and like, I'll get it right back on track. And my third beat sucked, the third scene sucked that I did, and then my attempt to initiate it, like, everybody was confused. I'm like, what the hell? I'm like, oh, I just made this 1,000 times worse because I'm trying to help. I might as well have just stabbed all of my teammates, and they're like, that's our Herald.
Oh, that would have been funny.
It would have been, right?
I like a good stabbing
scene. I like a good stabbing.
I really do.
Who doesn't? I love it. All right. We're doing pretty good on time here. You know what? Let's wind down. I was going to talk a little bit about one man shows. I don't know. Do you have anything you want to talk about on one man shows? You wrote those. They're very funny. You do. What's your approach to doing that? It seems like you kind of focus on a character and build out, or do you focus on a game and build a character? What's your deal?
Both. It depends on the thing. Like, I just have, like, my first show was like fucking crazy.
Sure.
This one is a little bit more, for like a broader audience, I think. Mm-hmm. The first one was truly
the family portraits.
Yeah. It was my first attempt to do anything by myself. Mm. I just wrote them. They were based on people that I knew or characters that I liked, and just like did those characters at like school night or whatever, like open mic-y character things you can do. But I think a lot of times it comes from like a voice or a tic. I also took class from Becky Drysdale, like a one person show class.
Nice.
That helped develop that one. And then whenever I moved out here, I just wrote another one because I wanted to get on stage, and it was like I moved here a couple months after they did auditions for Harold and Maude last time.
Right.
And so I was like, all right, well, it's going to be a while, so hopefully I can do this before. Hopefully I can get this.
Yeah.
Like, this will be my project to, like, get back on stage and, like, and try to do something here.
Yeah. Were you on the Harold team by the time that went up?
Right after.
Okay.
I did the Spank, like, the week before.
Got it.
Harold auditions.
Yeah. Okay.
It was, like, very much the same time.
That's funny.
Yeah.
You think doing a one-person show, you think it's important? You think you learned something from it? Like, do I need to do a one-person show?
Oh, I don't know if everyone needs to do one. I mean, it's weird. Do it. Yeah, it's fun. It's great. But it's fucking terrifying because you go out on stage, and if people don't laugh, then they don't... it's like you're like, this is funny. I think this is 35 minutes of funny.
Yeah.
So, and I had one show in New York where I was like, I wish someone would cover with me with gasoline and set me on fire. I really do, because I was like, I never want to go back in there. I'm a disgrace. Like, and it was just like the audience didn't dig it. I remember that particular audience. I was paired with another show, and I was like, oh, they must be here to see me, because when I was watching her show, they were pretty. Because whenever I'm paired, I try to watch a little, just so you can be supportive and whatever. But and I was like, oh, they're clearly here to see me because they're not laughing at her or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I did my show, and I was like, oh, why the fuck did these people come?
Yeah.
They don't want either of us. Like, they don't want anything to do with us.
What?
You still recording?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No worries. So that was like, that was a really painful one, but that's like the risk that you take when you do a show like that. Even when I did this one, the first time I did this bank, I was like, I don't know. Me and Amanda Sitko think this is funny, but like, maybe no one else will.
Yeah. Interesting.
I think it's a fun...
It was a good show.
Thing to do.
I liked it.
Thanks, man. Yeah. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's like harder on the back end, I think. Writing it is the fun part, but like filling the house and doing all that stuff is the hard part.
Yeah. It doesn't matter how good of a show you did if nobody's there. Cool. I love it. All right. Let's fuck it. Classic segment of the show, Pearls of Wisdom. Note of feedback or advice that you got that had an impact on your improv, something that you were like, oh, shit, I'm going to do this more. Think. Relax. It's okay. Could be something that maybe you echo to people a lot. You're like, oh, I do. Yeah, I heard this once. This is a great piece of advice, students that I'm teaching. coaching.
Oh, when I coach?
Yeah, not your tutoring.
I said so dumb. One note that I got that really helped me get better was Anthony King, who's like the best teacher. No, they're all the best, but he's so fucking good and like honest and understands improv in this way that I think probably maybe only an AD can. I don't know. There's like just something really. He has like a teachable style.
Yeah.
And I remember doing a scene in a class that with him. And it was funny and whatever, but it felt hard. And he's like, how did that feel? Nah, not good.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, it's because you can't just fucking hate something. And I was like, oh, okay. He was like, you need to articulate an alternative. If you hate something in a scene, you have to want something else. Because in the scene, I was like a little kid and I was trapped in a forest with like, I don't remember. It was like a fox with a saw. I don't remember the scene exactly, but yeah, those are the rough contours.
Yeah,
so
that classic
enjoy
improv
that.
Scene. Yeah, yeah. Kid in the forest with a fox with a saw.
Yeah. classic scene that I would be in. And the whole time I was like, I don't want to be here. I don't want to be here. And he's like, who would ever want to watch a scene? Who cares?
Yeah.
Where do you want to be? Then I care.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, shit. That makes good fucking sense. And now I think, like, when you watch shows or when I play, I try to not be negative right off the bat because it's so hard to heighten I hate.
Yeah.
It's really easy to heighten it if you're like, but I want this. Like,
yeah.
Mommy, I hate it here, but I want to go to Disney World. Great. Like, that's all you need. Like, because then everything just comes back to, like, those specifics and those details. And then you have a real point of view on why you don't like where you're at.
Yeah.
And I think that's just, like, a simple fucking click that really, really changed the way that I played. And then Chris, one other big thing that I always think about is Christina Gausis, who's like another like guru type teacher who just like just fucking is amazing.
Yeah.
Does she ever? Like, we probably wouldn't know her in LA, right?
No, I don't know. I've heard the name, but I don't really have a familiarity with her.
She's like extraordinary and singular in a way that I'm just saying that about everyone, I guess. But she really is like so fucking unique in her teaching style, and she's just like bright and amazing. And her thing was always like two things: like practice true non-judgment of yourself and others, which sounds like a thing that we know, right?
Sure. Yeah,
but we don't do.
Yeah,
like stepping on stage of yourself is the most important part of being like, no, Paul, it's okay, that move is fine, like don't judge it, it's not up to you to judge it. Like, I think that's so fucking beautiful. And she would always say, the only thing you have on stage is you and your scene partner, and that's all you need. And those are both like, feel like new agey things, but if you fucking stop and think about it, you're like, holy shit, that blows the whole game open. Like, that's what this shit is about. Like, just checking in with your scene partner, looking in your scene partner's eyes and just being like, oh, this is all we have. Like, all the other shit that we're creating, wacky fucking, you know, dildo factory that spurts mayonnaise when we get excited, like, that's all secondary to, like, what's going on here.
Yeah.
And the more that you can be here, how could it be hard?
It's very interesting. I love it.
It, like, breaks my heart that it's, like, that easy.
Yeah. If only we can all learn it that easy and just take it in and believe it and make it
true.
Well,
that's the challenge, right? Of just doing that. And, like,
because yeah,
there's that non-judgment part is fucking huge.
Yeah. Yeah. There's plenty of little, like, axioms in improv where you're just like, oh, if I just took this in, it'd be great. But it's not easy. It's not easy to just go, like, cool. I feel like I've gotten to this point where I'm like, 98% of the time, I'm like, all right, I'll play whatever is getting at me. I'll play whatever somebody's giving me. But like, yeah, if I do a weird choice, I'm like, ah, Steven.
Yeah, all the time. You beat yourself up all the time.
Like, why'd you do that?
Why couldn't it be a good move?
I remember, real quick on Cage Match, I'll just share this experience. Yeah. It was the first night, and Johnny came out, and he played two Shakespeares at one point, and then there was a third Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. And I said something like, oh no, there are too many Shakespeares, to nobody.
Uh-huh.
To no response. And then you went, three Shakespeares is too many, and killed the house with it. And I was like, God damn. Like, I don't know how that works, but I was like, I did it wrong. I did it wrong. I clearly did this wrong. And it was just, but like, that's one of those ones that you're like, yeah, I totally judged myself on that. And it's like, in reality, like, yeah, it wasn't really wrong. It worked. It just took a second to work. And Paul managed to like, kind of like, maybe I like thinking like, oh, maybe I alley-ooped it. Maybe that's the way to think of it. Like, I set it up to like, work.
You know, like they didn't hear it the first time. Yeah. That wasn't the right time in the scene for them to laugh at that thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing.
But I remember, but I was just like, God damn, Paul Welsh.
I remember that. That got a big reaction. That like ended
huge
the scene,
reaction. Maybe. And I was like, I just said that.
Just like matter of
I
fact.
I said that so closely to what you said. It's heartbreaking. I love it.
Oh, I stole it from
you. No,
me.
I love it. No, I don't care. I love it.
I'm an essence thief.
But
I dang cooked you.
No, it's great. I feel like that's one of those things too. I talked with Sarah about this a little bit. It's like sometimes I feel like on our team too because there's so many funny people. I'm like, I'm just very happy with like just setting stuff up because I realize that other people are just going to constantly hit home runs with laughs and like I feel like every now and then like I'll just like repeat something or like say something to like let's make it real sure everybody knows what I'm doing like we're doing and like cool we all heard that cool have fun with it you guys are going to be great like you kids go out there and have fun.
Oh, really?
I love it
when you can set up a game that, like, other people can play or you can, like, especially when you know people that you can, like, pimp them into doing something that you want them to do.
Yeah.
That's, to me,
it's the best. It's fun
stuff.
Yeah.
That's the coolest.
I love it. Okay, Paul. So like, that's it. Let's call it there. Do you have anything else, or do you want to share, or plug, or do you want to? Did you get to talk what you wanted to talk about? Do you want to talk about something? I feel like I put people on the spot with that one, and everybody's like, I don't know. Leave me alone. It's okay.
No, I think...
Do we cover all the improv knowledge?
I don't really have a broad base on that, but we didn't talk about this Herald team that I'm on.
Cooper. No, we didn't really hit that.
We can or we don't have to. I don't care.
Yeah.
It's a good team. I love it.
Good team. You love it. Coming in as a bunch of... it's all people who've been on Herald teams, right?
It's cool. Yeah, it's like all these like L.A. geniuses who I didn't even know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, cool.
Yeah.
I get to, they're like the guys.
Are you one of those people who's like, LA's different than New York? Like, there's a different.
No. And I try to really like stamp down any, like, this is a difference. Like, this. Because it's got to be fucking infuriating. But, no, I mean, it's a vaguely different. The system is like vaguely different. But, you know, it's the same deal. You're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
But it's a good. Yeah, I just wanted to say I think those guys are great.
Yeah, it is a good team. I enjoyed it very much. And it was one of those things, too. I said this, too, as I admitted, like, oh, I have a bias against those teams that came together. I saw a few of you guys' shows. I'm like, God damn, they're killing it. They're great. This is very strong. So I love it. What are you guys working on now, since you are a group of people who are, like, strong, obviously, at Herald in one way or another? You guys have already done it. Had some night, you know, you've had experience on Herald Night. Like, what do you guys like work on? As I'm always curious about like what people who I think are bulletproof work on.
Well, that's really nice, but no one's bulletproof. The same, honestly, dude, it's crazy. Now that I'm even listening to myself, it's the same thing that I was talking about earlier with both of those teams, of those other teams of like, where I think we really work on like finding ways to like, discover that like excitement that you get in the beginning when you're like, oh, this works. Like you can we can like figure out new stuff. That sense of discovery that I think like in your second and third year, kind of you're like, this is hard and it's not discovery and it's not fun. Like the way that we felt like on Monstro, like or those early Herald teams, like just trying so hard, where it's like, oh, you can like discover how fun it is. So we do an opening that's like pretty much organic, not sound and sound and movement sandwich kind of thing, but. And it does give that nice sense of like, oh, this could be anything. Like it gives that sense of possibility that I think you lose somewhere along the way just by virtue of like getting in reps and like hammering all these shows out.
Yeah.
That's what we really work on and doing like switching our second, like playing each other's beats and just like being a little looser with the Herald than like you would be otherwise if you were like nervous.
Yeah.
I don't feel like we're nervous.
Very cool. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, Paul, thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for having me, man.
It was super fun. I enjoyed it.
I did too. I hope I didn't. I feel like I guess the point is to like talk a lot, but I feel like I talked a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're the guest. It's about you.
And there's no one else, so I guess if I didn't talk about it, it would be super weird.
It would be super weird, just like me kind of like volleying questions to nobody.
But was it serious?
Yeah.
It was a little serious.
I mean, it wasn't like it wasn't like Holocaust serious. That's how I want to end this show.
Fair enough. I have no opinion on the Holocaust.
That was Paul Welsh. What a dude. He's the funniest. Check him out Monday nights at this UCB LA Herald team, Cooper. Or come check him out with my team, Styx Martin. A couple of quick show plugs. You'll hear these if for some reason you've spaced out and didn't just fast forward to the end of the show. Friday, June 21st, 9 p.m., the Manifesto Show at the Clubhouse. Styx Martin is performing. Then Saturday, June 22nd at 8:30 at Jackpot Improv at the Underground Annex Theater. Styx Martin is also performing. And then last but not least, Friday, June 28th, 7 p.m. at the Neon Venus, Brandon and Steven are going to go rock a two-man show. Should be fun. Thank you for the people who have been coming out to see shows. I'm glad you've been enjoying them, and I appreciate the support. That's it. Golden Age Improv. Happy improvising. Be excellent to each other. Goodbye.
Hey, it's Josh Simpson.
And Jake Jabbour.
From The Meat Improv. The Meat Improv is a comedy podcast where we bring on the best comedians in the world to tell meaty stories from their lives, and then they do improv comedy with us. You don't think we're good at improv? Check out this little snippet from Jake Jabbour's real life.
Hey, where's all my cats?
He never knows. The Meat Improv. You can listen to it on iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. That's The Meat Improv.